Interview with Sandys, MKT, 12th of December 1965.
Begin by asking people what made them join the colonial service.
Oh, well, in my case it was hereditary reasons.
Oh,
my great-grandfather, great-grandfather, grandfather were in the ICS in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to follow them and put my name down
mm-hmm.
on the old home Indian colonial list. And preference was India first, colony second, and home third.
Mm-hmm.
And the war broke out just as I was doing the exam in 1914.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing was that we were asked to go on and finish the exam. And we did that. And somehow I missed the Indian by a few places.
Mm-hmm.
And my second choice after that was Ceylon. There was Ceylon, Malaya,
mm-hmm.
and Hong Kong. And I think I put them down in that order.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, I was very pleased to get Ceylon.
Did you find that... were you at a public school in England?
Yes.
Did you find the public school life helped you in the colonial service?
Oh, yes, I think it did in general.
In any specific way?
Well, what you learnt of the history of our own country.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the thing to do. When I was first, took an interest in anything political, it was the 1902 election, and the Conservative Party was entirely conservative imperialist in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Practically entirely. We won the election on that. 1902, the time of the Boer War.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone that could get out did so.
I see. What about the military service itself? Did that help you?
Well, in my case, it took me out to India.
Oh, did it?
Yes. Oh. Took me out to India for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
1914 to 1919.
So the East was not a strange place when you came to Ceylon?
No, no. Yeah.
Did you find that as an OA, you were treated more or less as a dog's body?
Well, I should hardly call it that. I have very sympathetic GAs.
Mm-hmm.
I had no grouse or complaint against anyone. But I did find it a little bit too much office routine, not enough getting out into the country.
Mm-hmm. I think Mr. Stasos has made that point, and he said that sometimes he didn't know what his country work was about, and he would have preferred to go out a bit more.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yes, I felt the same.
That's very useful to know that. And how did you learn your job initially? Were you supposed to pick the brains of your GA, and did you do so? Or?
Well, a lot of it was writing reports to the GA
mm-hmm.
in the office and making a suggestion. And actually, you learnt that way. Either your suggestion was maintained by the GA, you made a similar order, or if he disagreed with it and wrote something different.
Mm-hmm.
In either case, you learnt something from it, I think.
Did you learn anything from the service stories and anecdotes?
You mean from the officials there, the spot?
Yes, you know. And would you say that civil servants generally prefer to do the administrative work rather than judicial?
Yes, I think they did on the whole. Yes.
Why?
Because it meant more going out in the open and seeing
yes,
all the people.
Yes, I see.
In the courts, you saw them rather at their worst than their best.
Yes, I should think so.
It was very trying. The hours are very long, too, especially in court.
Did you feel, from the revenue administrative point of view, that you could have done with more instruction and discussion with your superiors or your colleagues?
No, I didn't find that.
But wasn't it that you were really much rule of thumb.
Yes, it was mainly that. Of course, in the settlement department, I learned a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous amount. That was went very much into detail.
Yes.
The most valuable in all the administrative work was to know something about the land and the title, question of title.
Yes. What about these sort of courses, theoretical courses that they had in Oxford and Cambridge later on in the 1930s? Would that sort of thing have helped you?
I had no experience of that. It's difficult to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. I was wondering whether you would have liked to have known something about the elements of law and politics, and also to have perhaps had 6 months on the practical side of things like elementary engineering and, you know, irrigation works and things like that.
Oh, yes. There was one case of an AGA who taught himself to make plans of tanks and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But to what extent he'd had previous mathematical experience,
who was that?
I couldn't say.
Davidson?
No, Glenville, I think.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That was very useful. It was the only case I knew about.
I met Mr. Davidson, and he said he was a sapper during the war, so that helped him quite a lot.
Yes, it would, yes. Yes, but I found, of course, the alternative was to take tremendous interest in irrigation, so I always did, my favourite subject, and employ the irrigation engineers to do things for you.
Yes, that was open to you. But of course, at an earlier date, in the late 19th century, the special departments were not as well staffed, and I should have thought that the AGAs could have done quite well with some sort of practical training, even if very elementary.
Yes, it might not. It's a scientific thing, I think, as I discovered after I have personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be scientifically done, surveyed first.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that you drew the plan, and then the tank was practically foolproof, except in cases of very bad floods and so on.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering whether this rule of thumb method was pushed a bit too far. Whether it could have disastrous results.
Rule of thumb method could do...
Well, you had to go out sometimes on your own as an AGA, and you came across a problem which you never had faced before, and which no one has spoken about before, but which may have been quite a common thing. And each AGA tackled it in his own way, and some may have done quite a considerable harm.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's possible.
What about the directions that you got? Did you feel that there was too much of precedence and routine?
Yes, I certainly found I was doing too much office work
mm-hmm.
part of the time. Everybody found that, especially at Menard or the TV. There are very good examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
When the papers took too much of one's time, one couldn't get out of the country and see how things were being done.
Apart from the very weight of all this office work, did you feel that in certain policies, people tended to move too much in fixed grooves and didn't try to think up something new. Not just for the sake of thinking of something new, but to improve methods.
I can't remember anything definite in that way. I learned mostly by experience,
mm-hmm.
and doing things.
Did you find that when you were tackling problems or suggesting the repair of a tank or doing something which you felt was fairly concrete and something with a purpose, that either the provincial headquarters or Colombo tended to be rather obstructionist or to clamp down on these new ideas?
No, I've developed my own plan of dealing with the irrigation department.
Oh, what did you do?
I had my own plan for tank restoration. I divided them into three groups, A, B, and C tanks,
uh-huh.
and put them down in that order and gave them precedence in that order.
Uh-huh.
The A tanks were the tanks already restored. The B and C tanks, the C tanks were the tanks on the list. I had a list all the way down and took them up in the order I thought was best.
Yes.
That was not the business of the irrigation department. They had to examine the report then. The report came to me.
Yes, I see. And you had plenty of money and scope in doing this sort of thing.
Oh, yes, entirely, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was one of the joys of the job, and being outstation places. I was 60 miles from anywhere, or 30 miles from the railhead in Mullaty, my first district.
And how did the liaison with the education department work out?
Oh, excellently.
Mm-hmm.
Very well indeed. In most cases, after a time, when we got to know how it should work.
Thinking in terms of overall British policy in Ceylon, I know you're not at the helm of affairs as such, but did you feel that, in the sense of ultimate ideas, there was a lack of purpose and drive? For instance, did you feel that they were making an efficiency an end in itself rather than a means to an end?
You mean about general policy?
Yes, general policy.
No, I think I felt that things were improving all the time. As recommendations went out, I think they were attended to and taken up by degrees. Certainly we got much better, both in irrigation and in agriculture, especially in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
It improved enormously while I was out there.
Didn't you feel that, say, in the early 1920s, the Department of Agriculture could have been given a bit more priority? Or were they giving it sufficient emphasis, in your opinion?
Oh yes, I remember now they had a little school in the West Indies, which was set up about that time,
mm-hmm.
for the Empire.
Oh, I see.
And that did excellent work. People were sent out there to them. Mm. I had one or two working under me in various branches. That's a very good scheme. I think an ex-director was sent there from Ceylon,
mm-hmm.
and he took over for a number of years, I think, in charge of it. That was quite a good move.
Regarding land policy as such, from time to time you got the planters asking that government should help them to attract the Sinhalese to work on the plantation.
Oh, yes, yes.
What was the government attitude to this sort of thing? Or the AGA's and AGA's attitude?
Oh, we did our utmost to help it, to get the Sinhalese to work.
At full time?
Yes, when I was acting Commissioner for Labour for a short time. That's too modern, isn't it?
When was that?
That was under... Oh, who was the minister?
That was after independence, was it?
That was when... it was a late stage. It was about the time before the Second War, I think.
Oh, I see. In what district would this have been? Or just in general?
What was it about? The
planters wanting the Sinhalese to work on the...
Oh, yes, yes. When I was at Kandy, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Were you AGA Kandy then?
I was additional, yes, AGA.
That would be in 1937 or 38?
Just before the war, yes.
Didn't it mean that these Sinhalese who worked on the estates would be entirely divorced from the soil?
Oh, No, I can't imagine them being divorced from the soil. Singlies are never divorced from the soil, they'd always go back, wouldn't they?
But
if they had land, they'd go to it.
Yeah, but if they didn't have land, or if they had just a fraction.
And yes, you mean the fact that they could get wages prevented them from doing agricultural?
Yes.
I see. Well, it might have, I can't say. In fact, I found the Singlies didn't like working up at all.
Mm-hmm.
They preferred being in the warmth. That's why the Tamils, there's so many Tamils, they like working in there.
Would you say that one aspect of government policy, at least a tendency in policy, was to try and conserve the land in the native peasantry and prevent them alienating their paddy fields or even their essential chain of lands to planters?
Oh yes, now we come to that very interesting question of policy initiated by C.V. Brain. Yes.
No, I'm not thinking of only C.V. Brain. I know what Brain did.
Yes.
But that was with regard to the sale of crown land on an indivisible basis.
Yes.
I was thinking of private land which the peasants owned,
yes,
and which they were sometimes quite ready to sell for a song.
Yes.
To the planters.
Oh, yes, yes. Now I'm getting, yes.
What would an AGA do if he found that a peasant was selling his chain of land, or selling crown chain of land, pretending it was claiming it as his own and selling it to a planter, either Ceylonese or European?
No, I don't think you could in influence it in any way. What we did eventually was to give out crown land, which was under certain terms, and they couldn't alienate it. When that came in, it was all right, but before that, you couldn't do anything with private land. You mean, how do you deal with private land?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's the whole trouble. It was becoming fragmented all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Worse and worse. Till a man owned a fifth of a coconut tree, that sort of thing, eventually. That was very serious.
Yes, that was the problem of fragmentation. But what about the problem of land alienation? Alienating their own land to their own detriment.
I remember you often said that you couldn't prevent a man from being imprudent with his own things. Quite impossible to prevent him.
Well, in the African countries, they passed, and in Fiji, as early as 1830, they passed a law prohibiting them from selling land to anyone else.
Oh, yes.
I was wondering whether this had been thought of in Ceylon.
Not that I know of. No, I don't think so. But I was very much concerned in the new land policy. It started mainly by Mr. Brain.
Yes,
I saw him and...
I was coming to that as a side aspect.
Hmm.
But I would first like to... I was trying to clear this matter up and then go on to the land settlement department.
Yes, do. Yes.
You see, it could be said that in certain areas, certainly not in all the areas, but in some areas, there was a conflict in policy in the sense that there was a danger that peasants wouldn't have room for expansion because land had been sold to the planters, either by government or by the peasants.
Yes.
And so, there was this danger that the village and the villager would suffer either by government land sales or by their own imprudent land sales.
Yes.
And I wonder whether there was any sort of attempt to stop this. What about the land settlement department?
Well, the land settlement department, it went out and it took up a certain area.
Yes.
And it found out by its procedure which land was crown and which land was private. And if the land was private, it was marked private.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of it.
That was all. What if you found that some villager had claimed pasture land, which belonged to the village, but which belonged to no one in particular, but which the whole village had been using, or several people had been using, and had sold this necessary village land to a planter for some ridiculous sum usually. Even though he hadn't got a full title to it, in effect he was selling crown land.
Oh yes, yes. Well, then it depended on the age of the cultivation. I think after 10 years we may know. We didn't follow the question up after a certain time.
Yes. Was it your practice when you were in the settlement department to retain some of it for the village and force the planter to pay for the rest of it to the government?
I think the first question we always determined was whether the land was crown or private.
Yes, agreed. Once it was found that it was private, the crown land, what did you do?
Crown land, it was declared crown under the Wastelands Ordinances.
Yes, but
there was a certain procedure for doing that.
But didn't you reserve land for some of this crown land for the village, if it was necessary?
Oh, now we're going on to mapping out, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, yes, I did hours of work on mapping out. That's the most valuable procedure. We couldn't do without it. But we had to get the land declared crown first.
Yes. And what did mapping out involve?
Well, what it was wanted for. That was the procedure in itself. We went through the village. We made an inquiry, I think, as to whether the land was wanted for cattle pasture or for forest. Or for any purpose like that, for scenery, all sorts of odd subjects, or for irrigation purposes, or anything like that.
Did you ever consider the needs for population growth and future?
Oh yes,
growth?
You're talking about that. One of the obvious things was village expansion or settlement, expansion or settlement of the word.
Yes, that.
You heard that before?
Yes.
Yes, and that was the land was if. There was an urgent need in the village for that. It was put up by ourselves, by the settlement officer, or left to the GA to do afterwards. I've done both the GA and the settlement officer.
Yes. One criticism that has been made is, wouldn't it have been useful for you to have gone out with a surveyor rather than send your plans to the survey department? You know what I mean? Worked in the field itself with a surveyor.
Yes. Well, we worked in terms of so much land, an acre or 2 acres or 3 acres or whatever, or even half an acre sometimes.
But didn't you find that as an AGA,
yes,
you found that a certain village was being settled, but it took years before the village was released, you see what I mean, from the settlement, before they cleared it out?
Oh, yes, yes, that was a serious grievance. That was hopeless. I know, I found that in several cases. In fact, I followed it up both in Manar and in Martley and one or two other places. As J or AGA.
Yeah.
As J or AGA, you had powers to act as a settlement officer.
Yes.
And being familiar with it, I went out and did pieces here and there. And it produced great relief because it meant that you got rid of a certain amount of land and marked the rest crown, and then you could start giving it out for various purposes.
But if it had not been released, it was a great nuisance.
Yes. Oh, it became a nightmare sometimes. Many of our troubles were due to non-settlement. I know a settlement was unpopular in certain quarters, but it was an extraordinarily useful.
Yes. How did they, concentrating on the land settlement department, how did they decide which area should be taken up and which areas should not be taken up immediately, you know?
That was a question, a big question, which I didn't have much to do with personally. It was done in the office, the settlement officer, I think, probably met certain the land commissioner and various GAs, and decided which should be taken up and did that first.
Of course, they don't have a basis on which they chose areas.
I couldn't say. They left out certain areas near the coast, which were heavily claimed, I know. I always lamented that, especially around Gaul. Couldn't get it. Things were doubtful and difficult for that reason.
Yes, I see.
Well, they thought it was an appreciable amount of crown land.
Oh, I
think that was probably the answer. Then they decided on getting that surveyed and settled. I'm not sure about whether the surveyor could help at an earlier stage. I never discussed it or thought about it. It didn't come up.
On the field, a simple sort of, I don't know if it's a technical term, triangular, sort of boundary survey, I think it's called.
Yes, yes. Well, we gave them a good deal of latitude, I think, as far as I remember. We only put, we took a pencil and just drew the...
rough sketch.
The Hainas, wherever they were, you know, they all had curious names.
Hainas.
Yes.
Now, when you were working in 1929 and 1930
yes.
as a land settlement officer...
I was actually doing it as land settlement
yes.
officer, assistant.
You were working under the system which had been changed by this land commission, wasn't that so? Somewhere in the mid-1920s, they recommended certain recommendations which changed the earlier system.
I think so, yes. But I wasn't doing it under the earlier system. I don't know what that was.
Yes, how did you learn your job?
I went down to Mr. Stace,
uh-huh.
and Mr. Egan, I think, was assistant settlement officer. I went out with him and stayed in his camp for about a week or a month. So
it was, in a sense, you were following precedence here?
Oh, yes, I followed. I didn't strike out any new lines as far as that was concerned.
Would it be fair to say that as one of your... Well, part of your policy was to protect the villager and the villager from the speculator.
Oh, yes, it would amount to that, certainly. Yes.
You were conscious of the activities of speculators and genuine planters who encroached on village land.
Well, they could get unsettled land, certainly. It was the unsettlement of the land that produced all that trouble.
Oh, I see.
Just a confusion.
And, you see, in the 1920s and for two decades before that, many politicians were criticizing this British Westlands policy and criticizing the Land Settlement Department.
Yes.
But there is some evidence to show that some of these politicians, though not all of them, were themselves speculators and land buyers
yes.
Who were being dealt by the LSD.
Yes.
Would you say that's correct?
Oh, yes, I think so, yes. Yes, there were grounds for what's the word, criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
Was there in Ceylon a class of people whom you might call land brokers, who specialized in buying dubious claims and then selling them to planters?
I should think very likely. I don't know them under that term. But there were people, I remember in Ratnapur district, who were known experts in this sort of thing. I know there were several people well known for that.
Were there any chaps who took to politics afterwards? Or were politicians themselves?
Oh, I expect so. They're just sort of people that would take to that.
Did you feel that were some of them lawyers and proctors?
Right? Yes, yes, very likely. That's the crowd, yes. Yes.
And would you say that they were generally unscrupulous in the way they got the land from the villager?
Oh, I couldn't have enough experience to say that, hardly. I think probably were, yes.
What about the villagers themselves? What did you feel their attitude was to you as a land settlement officer?
I remember the bit I did at Martley. I took up a village that had been surveyed and left sitting there for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was growing up again, so one could hardly recognize what the cultivation was.
Mm-hmm.
And I settled them all. There was only enough for village, what we call village settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave the whole lot out and they were delighted. The whole village came and thanked me for it and said there were more than...
This
more
was
than
when you were A.G.A. Bartlett.
Yes, A.G.A. Bartlett.
1935,
that's 36, right.
Yes.
After that ghastly malaria epidemic.
Yes, I see. And...
It's difficult to... It's rather a big question, isn't it, whether they were satisfied.
Was there a certain amount of grumbling?
It was grumbling because they didn't realise what the position was.
Mm-hmm.
They thought there was more land there than there was there very often.
I was asking this question because I was trying to establish whether the politicians were representing the grievance of the villager or were for political and other purposes raising this question of their own bet. You see what I mean?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm.
Did you feel that this political criticism was in response to a grievance on the part of the villagers?
I think there was certainly a point where they realized that the old system wouldn't do. In fact, villagers agreed with Brain's theory that just selling the land wasn't good enough because the rich man had this advantage that he could buy all the land.
Yes, and. Wouldn't this be a fair criticism of the Land Settlement Department to say that they did settle land and they did map out, but after they left an area, was there much to prevent the villagers alienating their own land after they had settled an area?
Oh yes, there was. There was this legislation in terms of which they were given the land.
Oh, this is Brain's land.
Yes.
No, I was not only thinking of that. I was thinking of the Land Settlement Department's work. They mapped the village out.
Yes.
And they reserved...
We mean settled some bit on the villages.
Yes.
That was a different form. Well, that was the best title in the world. Everybody recognised that.
The Land Settlement
Department. Yes, that was definitely... There's no big interfere with that.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we got... I forget the exact date or time, but we got instructions not to follow that out, not to settle on those lines. Because
that is after Brain's
yes,
thing.
Yes, yes.
Now I was thinking of before Brain's idea was brought into being.
It was good title.
Yes.
Yes.
But now since your aim was to protect the village,
yes,
and you gave them good title, and sometimes you mapped a village out and left room for expansion. Was there, after you had left, anything to prevent these villagers acting foolishly and sometimes giving out this communal land to planters?
Oh yes, because it was a criminal offence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing, that's where you were.
But they could sell the title of the land which they got a title to.
Oh yes, rather, yes.
Mm.
Yes. Oh yes, that's why Brain went on, you see, to prevent this alienation as far as he could.
The criticism has been made of Brain's idea that it was good in theory but very difficult to work administratively. Did you find that so?
Let me see now, I don't think of any examples. There were a good many of these pieces of land that were not taken up, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they weren't occupied.
So you got...
And then we got petitions, could I have a piece of abandoned land? That was quite common.
I mean, apart from that, Brain's idea was to prevent fragmentation.
Yes, prevent fragmentation.
But what was...
I think it did that on the whole.
You think so? What is there to prevent a chap... while not selling it, giving out the land on a sharecropping basis, on a fragmented basis, to sharecroppers, on under tenure.
Yes.
I mean, when you sold about 1,000 plots in one district, it was difficult to keep an eye on the whole lot.
Well, the penalty was cancellation of the lot, I suppose, if he did anything contrary to the permit, you see, the terms of the permit.
Oh, I see.
It would take
the terms were pretty strict, were they?
Yes. Yes, they were. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, as far as I remember, we could control that.
What did the headman say about the system?
Oh, they took it quite calmly. I don't think they minded.
Because ultimately, keeping an eye on things depended on them, didn't it?
Yes, well, it was taking a head by a headman to be a good headman, and most of them were on the whole. As they were carefully chosen for being good men.
Mm-hmm.
And they were quite pleased, I think, because the villagers were pleased. They were villagers themselves. Of course, that if I may say something about the mapping out, it fulfilled their requirements admirably, because we were always having trouble over the cattle pastures and things like that.
And
in unsettled villages.
Whereas in
cattle were all over the place where they shouldn't have been.
Oh, yes. And what did you find in settled villages? Was it different?
Oh, it was quite different, yes, where we could get a proper thing going for them. And the same way these village forests, that was another thing with Brown. The villager must have forests, mm-hmm. all sorts of things to build his houses with. And it was misery work. There wasn't one anywhere near. This happened near the coast.
When you were mapping out, what did you do if you found that one or a few villages didn't have any land at all?
Well, you could only colonize them somewhere else. That's where the whole policy of colonization came in. If I've got land 20 miles away, will you go there?
Did they?
They said, yes, I've got a picture here I can show you.
Yes, I saw that one.
You see that one?
Yes.
Up in Hinadumpatu, miles away from where they lived originally. I mean, that was the Galloa scheme, was after my time rather, but I believe that
yes,
was
but
the of it.
What if there was no colonization within the area?
You could really pull. Quite impossible. If they wanted bits of land, they couldn't take other people's land.
And what happened if you found that a plant had bought up quite a lot of village land, which was needed when you were mapping it out, and it was non-planted land, it hadn't been used yet?
Oh, yes.
And you found that this land was on rather dubious title. It was, in fact, crown land. What did you do in such circumstances? Did you sell the land to the planter?
Well, if it was suspected that it was crown land, you could put it under the terms of the land settlement orders and settle it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the end of that. And then, I mean, then you could do what you liked with it.
You could do what you liked.
But if the planter had the best of the case and could prove it to be private, then
it was
personally I shouldn't have taken any action. That brings a whole question into view to what extent you should
interfere.
You should interfere with plantations or not. Of course, there was a case for and a case against. It did provide employment for the villagers, the surrounding villagers, no doubt about that.
Yes.
Having the estate there.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that having the estates in the vicinity was good for the villagers?
Oh, yes, yes. It enabled the population to increase. That's a very important point.
Would you be able to agree that policy was to have, where there were other capitalists of this sort, policy was to have them near enough to the villager to influence him, and not so near as to dispossess him. You see what I mean? To take all the way, away all his land, but near enough for him to work.
Yes.
I don't suppose you thought on those lines.
I think that's a difficult question to answer.
Mm-hmm. But wasn't there a tendency to give first consideration to village claimants rather than to outside claimants?
Oh yes, it was certainly. That was one of the principles, because it was clear that the land in the island was becoming scarce.
Mm-hmm.
And so after settling a village and finding what was available, then you could first of all take your public purposes, as we called it. I've forgotten that, public purposes, post offices and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
You see, and just beginning to remember it. And your forests, your small village forests, and your cattle pastures and so on. After, you could go on to the village was next, and then I've come to another one, the middle class man. We had him. He was next, I think. And then after that, the capitalist was last.
Oh, I see.
So it's a question of order, you see, precedence,
mm-hmm.
which one you should choose. But I felt it was unwise to worry the estates if you had any land that nobody wanted it, and
mm-hmm.
keep it.
I quite see that. It's a question of this land which both groups wanted. You see what I mean?
Yes, yes. Yes, quite.
And did you have wide discretion in naming the price of the land? If it was crown land?
Let me see now. Of course, the villagers' land was a fixed price, rupees, an acre, whatever it was.
Yes.
For outsiders, they had special terms.
Mm-hmm.
The middle class man had a special term and a special contract. And I don't know whether he sold it outright to the planter. Can't remember now. I think by the time I left, it was only a leasehold.
Mm-hmm.
Probably long lease.
Yes, I see.
You see?
One thing that intrigues me about your day-to-day work as a LSO, did you go with an interpreter?
Into?
Did you use an interpreter?
Interpreter, yes. That's right, yes.
What were the specific areas in which you worked as a land settlement officer?
Mostly in two parts of the island.
Mm.
One was in the Kurunagla district, near Dundungamwa,
Dundungamwa. Mm-hmm.
And the other was in the Ratnapura district, particularly near the Adams Peak, base of the Adams Peak there.
Mm-hmm.
I settled quite a number of villages there.
Uh-huh. How good was your Sinhalese, if I may ask?
Well, it was never as strong as I should have liked it to be. But I could understand the villager.
Oh, you could. Could you manage without the interpreter?
I've sometimes been out all day with a headman who couldn't speak a word of English.
Mm-hmm.
Could get along with him pretty well.
Oh, well.
Just small things that they're likely to want.
These villages at the foot of Adams Peak, were there any plantations in their vicinity?
Plantations? Oh, yes, fairly near.
Fairly near?
Yes.
It would have been more sort of vertical linear rather than horizontal linear. You would have been ascending to the plantations, would you?
No, I don't know. I see what you mean. I was on that route which went up from Carney Estate. On that.
Was there any sort of clash for land there? Or were the villagers, shall I put it another way, were the villagers short of land?
Oh yes, they were always short of land.
No, I'm not thinking of their claims, but what you felt was necessary. They always claimed more than they wanted.
I don't know, I came up against very little conflict between the state people and the
villagers. That's a very useful fact, yes.
Very little.
Uh-huh. And another thing that has always intrigued me is this question of, it was 30 years occupation, you see, it was crown land if they hadn't occupied it for 30 years. But how do you define 30 years occupation when it came to China land?
Yes. Years occupation, I forget now, that was the... It would be put up, of course, and claims would be called for in the first instance. either claim or not claim. They claim wisdom, we should go into it.
But, I mean, Jainas were cultivated once in 5 to 15 years, and how were they going to prove 30 years ownership of a Jaina?
Yes.
I know this is a rather detailed question, but I...
It is rather difficult to settle that, but when I'm going to the facts connected with it, I suppose. I can't remember now.
Oh, but it doesn't matter. But